All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Life Nutrition. And my guest today is Mark Washington, the founder, CEO of Supergut. Mark, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks so much for having me, Justin. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm really excited for the conversation. You got a really good background, a lot of interest, a lot of similarities too, in some of the things that that I'm into in you know, health, nutrition wise.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, I saw that you went to school and the East Coast as well. You went to Harvard Business School, I believe, which is pretty cool. It's right up the street from me, essentially. I mean, not right up the street, but it's pretty close.
Around the corner.
Yeah, up the street, around the corner, you know.
I'll claim it, but I will say my true heart was in undergrad. Like, I went to Princeton, so also East Coast undergrad. So that was like my true heart. Harvard was great, business school, great connections, everything. But people used to ask me, like, oh, when they play each other, who are you rooting for? Like, Harvard. I was like, come on, man. I went to Princeton undergrad. I played football at Princeton. Like, that's where the heart is, right?
So. Nice. You play football too, yeah?
Yeah. Back in the day, man. So running back.
Running back?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you get your 40 time?
I was all right. I was like fast for the Ivy League. I was 4.6.
Nice.
So good for the Ivy League football.
Yeah.
Not good enough to play on Sundays. I need to be about an additional 50 pounds, you know, about 3 more inches tall. And then a 4.6 would kind of get you on Sundays.
Yeah. But, that's all right, man. It's still good. I have a friend of mine who weighed about 175 pounds in high school, and he was like the stud linebacker, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Middle linebacker. But absolutely. He was just like, he was incredible, but he's just too small. Like, if he was 4 inches taller maybe, and 40 pounds heavier, he'd be in the NFL. But
I know a lot of folks that fit that description. Absolutely true.
Yeah,
that's absolutely true.
It's incredible how far genes will get you, but toughness and perseverance will go a long way too.
Absolutely, you said it.
But yeah, man. So how did you get involved with this stuff? I'm looking back on some of the notes, and you've been, I believe, the CEO of Irwin Naturals, which is a huge supplement line as well. What else was there? Was it?
I was president of Beachbody. Yeah, I was COO of Beachbody, the fitness and supplement big company.
So how does a guy going to Harvard Business School and Princeton and all these other, you know, top Ivy League schools, how does he get involved with essentially supplements and nutrition and the health field, which, and entrepreneurial stuff as well? Now, which you got Supergut, you're the CEO of that. But how do you go from, you know, being in Harvard and having that education and then kind of going off into this route? Because I don't know about you, but it seems like when I've been in the supplement world, a lot of people kind of tend to shun natural treatments and natural alternatives to mainstream medicine and, you know, the vitamins, the minerals, the herbs, those types of things. How did you have that interest to go even down that road, and what made you want to take that?
No, absolutely. I mean, it really goes back to personal life, what motivates you. I would say coming out of school, I didn't know what path that I wanted to be, a business and executive. That's actually why first thing I did was like consulting, which is what a lot of folks do with that kind of background, just to figure stuff out, right? Just solve problems, help people, which is great. You know, I realized that, one, I didn't want to be a consultant, but it also led me down the path of, you know, getting into general management, right? And the thing that gravitated towards kind of one direction was like things that I could touch and feel, like consumer businesses, right? So that's the direction I took. And then I, you know, found my first real job at a business called The Wonderful Company. So based in Los Angeles, it's a family-owned business, but it's now about a $6 billion business, healthy food and beverages. So they own Fiji Water and Palm Wonderful. Okay. They're big in almonds and pistachios and wine and citrus fruit. It's a huge, huge successful business. And that's where I really found my calling, right? One, in general management broadly, but then secondly, in the space of health and wellness and food and what can you give people? Because it was like, it's always been my personal thing. Like, I've always been into nutrition and, you know, wellness and fitness and sports. And so I've kind of followed my personal life. And that's where I was able to put kind of the personal life, actually bring it into my professional career. And I was like, once I felt that, once I saw it, it just felt so good, right? I mean, when you're doing good in the world and helping people live healthier, like that for me was like, became my North Star. And so I was like, this is my pathway there. So I actually give that credit as a first stop. And then kind of gone on, kind of touched every aspect of you know, nutrition and wellness, from food and beverage to fitness, right, to supplements, and now into the gut health aspect of it as well. So yeah, this is my calling. I love helping people live healthier lives, and ideally doing it, finding natural ways to do it. Like, I'm just a huge believer, one, in the power of food, and then secondly, in the power of the human body, like this machine that we are all blessed with. Like, it can do amazing things when you treat it right. And so how can we find ways to treat it right that aren't as dependent on, you know, on the healthcare system? Like, that's what gets me going.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like we have this perfect machine, and we tend to, like, life tends to just get in the way and throw a wrench into it and mess up some of the gears that are naturally, you know, wired to perform incredible feats and even heal itself when given the proper inputs, essentially. And it's really incredible how much nutrition and diet and supplementation will go as far as getting things back in order.
That's so true. By the way, like, that is absolutely true. And that's just fundamental to my belief. I think it's on both sides, though, right? So if you think about the first part, a lot of why so many of us are not healthy and dealing with health issues and disease is because of nutrition, right? I mean, and, you know, not getting the stuff you need and way too much of the stuff that is doing damage for you. And it's hard, right? I mean, it's in the way. You've got, you know, big food, like ultra processed fast food, like all this unhealthy stuff that is just coming at you from all different angles. It's hard to live your life and, you know, live in a healthy oriented way where you're consistently getting the nutrients in your diet that you need. So I definitely think nutrition is the solution, but I also think, you know, big food and everything, you know, the game is rigged. It's also the cause of so much, you know, harm to, you know, our health and wellness.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, even in the air we breathe now and the water we drink and the other foods that we consume and, you know, the mold inside our apartments or our homes, or the day-to-day toxins and some of the detergents and the cleaners that we use. It's just like there's so many things going against us and bombarding our health and bringing our systems down that it's so easy then for, you know, sickness to arise after that, disease to start to formulate after that. And it's like, you really got to address a lot of these things. If you're going blindly through life, they're just going to accumulate over time, mm-hmm. and you're not going to mm-hmm. be able to get those things out of your system. So it's really important to cleanse and then to optimize your systems while you can, so that you're fighting off these things that are insidiously, if not just completely hiding in the shadows as they, you know, subtly attack your cells over time and mm-hmm. break them down.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you know what? Obviously, you know, I'm biased here, but as we talk about nutrition, it actually has a role, not just in your internal health, but in your environmental health and your immune system and your ability to be resilient, right, as well. Yeah. Actually, is nutrition like that has a huge role in that factor as well from an environmental standpoint.
Yeah, I'm curious, man, what because for me, I really started diving into not necessarily nutrition, but along those lines, which kind of then formulated into nutrition. But health for sure and fitness for sure started for me around like age 14. And it was basically, I wonder if it's similar for you, but it was like, because I was a smaller kid growing up. I wanted to pack on some muscle. I wanted to get bigger. I wanted to be good on the football team and the basketball team. And so like back then it was like reading all these magazines about, like, you know, lifting weights and, you know, the Arnold workouts and this and that. And it was like, that was really the first part of my life that I got exposed to this and really developed an interest into my well-being, my fitness. Mm-hmm. And then from there, kind of, you know, just accumulated over time. But what was it for you that kind of propelled you into this stuff?
That's a really good question. Let me think back. I think there were a couple of things. I mean, first, I had a very similar circumstance as you, right? I mean, and for me, the intended outcome of that interest in health and wellness was for sports, right? I mean, because I was just, I played every sport imaginable. And I knew that in order to continue to craft my game and to continue to compete and to win, I needed to be as healthy as possible, as fast as possible, as strong as possible, and so forth. I wouldn't say that when I was 13 or 14, I necessarily had my nutrition game on point. Yeah. It was more just like consume as much as possible because my metabolism was like through the roof because I was always moving. So I wasn't like that thoughtful. It was literally, I had issues trying to gain weight, right, to get bigger and stronger. But I was physically fit and very, very active throughout my youth and as I was growing up. I'd say the second thing that actually comes to mind as you ask about history, I think there was something always inherent in me about broader health and wellness. Like, I was the little kid that would goad my parents and get on them whenever I felt like they weren't like putting in the work or working out enough or what have you. So we would get like, you know, the exercise bike at home and it would become, you know, a clothes rack. And so I would get on my mom, I'd take the clothes off. I was like, Mom, no, don't hang your clothes on this. Like, that's for you to get to work, right? I mean, so I was that one like poking and prodding to get them, right? Because I was just so physically fit and active. It was just always a part of my mentality. And I actually, you know, I'm sure I was a little bit annoying as a kid to my parents, always goading them into maintaining their physical, you know, fitness as well. So yeah, it's always been there for me.
Yeah. Do you think you're a naturally motivated guy? It sounds like as a young kid, you were pushing yourself to excel. I mean, you ended up going to Harvard, Princeton, becoming CEO of, I believe, multi-million, if not billion-dollar companies. Like, where did that always come? Was that inherent, or is that something that, was there an outside factor, maybe environmentally, that you can look back on that you think was the driving force?
Yeah, it was some of both. It was the whole nature versus nurture question. Like, yeah, there absolutely was something that was in me that always had this inner drive to excel. And it wasn't from an ego place. It was almost like a spiritual place, like almost feeling like I was, you know, fortunate and gifted with abilities and so forth. I was like, you need to put that to work. Like, you can't be lazy and sit around and not work. You need to work extra hard to actually take advantage of the opportunities that have been, you know, laid in front of you. I think it's always been a part of it. And so I always have had that inner drive to succeed, excel, and, you know, and try to win, right? I'm very competitive. And that applied across the board, right? And so physical fitness, yes. And sports, absolutely, right? And academics, you know, same thing. I was like, you know, I'm going to work, I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to give everything I got. So that was definitely in there in me. I do think my environment played into it as well. Just having, you know, a great family upbringing, a great household. My mom and dad were intimately involved. We had, you know, we are a very religious family as well. So I think the church played a role in creating that, you know, spiritual focus, and that inner faith contributed to it as well. So I do think that the environment that I was in definitely contributed and really played into my own inner natural desire to excel and exceed and to do more.
I'm curious too, with some of these, you know, super successful CEOs, founders, businessmen, there's like two schools of thought, I think, as far as how much to push yourself versus how much to be in balance. I'm kind of curious as to what you think of that, as far as like, are you one of these guys who's always on the go? Like, Grant Cardone comes to mind, just a, you know, guy who's always, or Gary Vee, for instance, always pushing. And then you have some of these different CEOs and highly successful people that are more in balance, yeah, where they have like a morning routine, they meditate, they do this, they do that. And it seems, and they get enough sleep, and it seems like that is kind of the recipe for their success. But what would you say is your angle?
That's a really good question. I will say that I actually vacillate a little bit between both, and it actually has evolved over time in my career. And so I'll say my innate kind of emphasis, I tend to lean more towards the balance side in terms of what I like, what brings me joy, and what I feel good about, you know, not just myself, but the fact that this is more than just me, but I have a wife, I have kids, I have, you know, responsibilities, et cetera. And so for me, I have tried throughout my life, throughout my career, to try to maintain a pretty balanced approach, right? I mean, when I'm doing something, I'm all in, but, you know, can cut it off, can, you know, make sure I'm getting home, I'm having dinner with my kids, I'm trying not to travel too much. Like, so those things have always been inherent to me. So I tend to lean mostly in an area of balance. Now, we'll say it's modulated somewhat over time because I'm new to the entrepreneurship game, right? I mean, so I've been the right hand to an entrepreneur, and I felt like it's been, I was better able to manage my life in a way that maintained balance in an executive roles relative to being the entrepreneur, the one in the seat, where I would say, and my wife would very much vouch for this, it's been hard to maintain a real strong semblance of balance as an entrepreneur, as a startup entrepreneur, where you are in the game, where it's do or die, where it's every single day, it's like on your shoulders. So yeah, I would say over these past 4 years has definitely been the time period where it's tilted more in the other direction, not necessarily always the healthiest level of balance, because I've just had a difficulty turning it off. When it is your baby, when it is your thing, when you feel like everything's riding on it, it's harder to create that separation and that sense of balance. I still do try to keep it, you know, modulated. I'm still having dinner with my kids, right? And so there's some things I hold on to, but in terms of a sense of always being on, I definitely have exhibited more of those traits, you know, since starting down the entrepreneurial path and starting Supergut 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's very interesting you say that, because I hear, I mean, it seems like the natural succession, the right approach to being an entrepreneur, even if you're running a smaller startup, brand new, you know, small business, it can be incredibly tiresome and stressful. Yeah. And because you're the man, I mean, everything goes back to you at the end of the day. Yeah. But I have heard of executive CEOs that work 90, 100 hour weeks. And I think there was a story a couple of years ago where there is, I believe it was the Yahoo CEO is a female woman.
Probably her.
Mm-hmm. She just had a child, a kid, and then she was still like, I think she took a week off or something, yeah, and she jumped right back into 90 hours. Yeah, it's insane.
That's so wired in some people. Like, that's just how they are. The Gary V's, the Elons of the world. That's not me. That's not me.
But it's funny though that you can maintain such a high level of success without having to do some of those things. Like it's mm-hmm. almost it's kind of like the trade off too with sleep. It's like, yeah, you're not actually getting things done when you're sleeping, like the work isn't being done, but then the mm-hmm. rest is happening. So it's like when you are getting back to work, you can probably do a lot more.
That's the thing. Yeah. And that's why I try to not go too far in either extreme, even as an entrepreneur, like, cause something that I've always, as part of my belief, and I've always promoted, not just for myself, but for the teams that I manage as well, is like this mentality of work hard, play hard. When you're in something, like, be in it, but also find some way to find some balance in your life so that you're not running on empty, like perpetually, because yeah, you may be putting in more hours, but the quality of the work that you're putting in, I guarantee you, does suffer over time. If you don't have some semblance of balance, if you're not able to show up like with at least a half tank, if not a full tank of energy, like, you know, it's for many people, it's really hard to be at their best in that case. And so I've always, that's kind of part of my natural tilt towards a more balanced, you know, approach. It has been tested, right? So I'm not perfect by any means, but I really do believe in that from an overall standpoint though.
Yeah. And what would you say is the major difference as far as mindset philosophy goes for being a CEO versus being the founder, the main guy who comes up with a completely new idea and has to run the show essentially by himself, at least in the beginning?
Yeah. They are so different. It's fascinating.
Is it?
And here's the thing, like, I was even surprised, and I've spent most of my career, obviously in executive roles, but they were always working for and with an entrepreneur. Bigger scale, right? But still entrepreneurial, privately held companies. Like, I've been like the right hand. So I've had like kind of the front row seat to see what it looks like and how it feels. And like at every job, I was like, okay, yeah, no, this is intense. Like, we really are going at it and so on and so forth, right? Then when I decided to do this, right, and create something from scratch, be in the arena, the entrepreneur, the founder, it's a totally different level. Like, and I underestimated, even though I had seen like what it's like working with an entrepreneur. It's just hard to describe kind of some of the differences. I guess I'll characterize a little bit. There, one is just pressure, right? And a lot of this is self-applied, but it's also from the market, from investors, from customers, from everybody that you carry a lot of on your shoulders. Versus, you know, when you're executive, you got the team and you share the load and it's everybody at once. Whereas, you know, I have a team, it's obviously smaller, tends to feel more like Atlas, right? I mean, holding the weight of the world at times is kind of the entrepreneurial experience. I'd say one of the other things that entrepreneurship has taught me relative to executive is the need for resilience and grit is amplified. right? Again, like I've been in tough environments, high pressure, like made decisions with a whole lot more zeros behind them. Like when you're working for 100+ billion, $1 billion companies, you're making huge decisions affecting large things. I tell you, the pressure and that you feel when you're making these decisions as an entrepreneur that could sometimes make or break your entire company, even with a lot fewer zeros, is a whole lot more pressure. And the other thing is, like, you have to get used to essentially almost on a daily basis feeling like you get punched in the mouth as well as you win the World Series like multiple times a day, and then the next day you're going to do it again, right? And so you have to have like this resilience, this grit to get punched in the face and get back up and get back at it the next day in a way that I just never experienced as an executive. So I tell people all the time, like some people will say, oh, there's an entrepreneur and you're your own boss and this is great and you're doing great stuff. It's like, and they're like, so I should do an entrepreneurship. Everybody should do it. I was like, okay, just slow down. There's a lot of truth in that, right? And I absolutely love what it is that I'm doing. I've never been more inspired, fulfilled to create something like from scratch that I think has just such a potential for a positive impact in the world. And we see it already, right? It's the best. At the same time, it's the hardest thing I've ever done, like by far. And so I always tell people, like, listen, there are so many amazing things about this entrepreneurship game, but look yourself in the mirror before you want to just dive in and assume it's going to be a cakewalk and all fun and huge valuations and all so on and so forth. You better be really, really cautious and thoughtful about what you're getting into. And if you don't feel like you've got the thick skin to be all the way in, if you don't feel like you have that sense of resilience and just would fight, you know, run through brick walls to put out what it is that you're behind, I'd say don't do it, because you're probably not going to succeed, because you need to have like some real resilience and grit behind what it is that you're doing to make it successful. Because the odds are most startups do not make it out. You know, even if they make it out of the gate, they don't get to first base or they don't get to second base, and very, very few like hit a home run, right? So the odds are not necessarily stacked in your favor. So just be really mindful and thoughtful. It tends to be my advice before people jump into this this entrepreneurship game. It's not for the faint of heart, put it that way.
Yeah, it's certainly not. I can attest to that for sure, man. It's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of failures before you see success. But I'm sure one of the main things that helped you out was having that background, being a CEO and running things from being the right hand man and not having to have all the burden on you. But I think, I want to ask you, but I would say, if I had to guess, that having a lot of the systems, the way they're set up in a company and in an organization, probably helped you bring that over to how to start up your own company, right? But like, yeah. What was the biggest takeaway from your past of being in business as an executive to transferring some of that information into being the guy running the show now?
Yeah, absolutely. There's the one biggest error that I claim, and it's both experience from being executive, but I'll even go back further than that. Growing up in sports and being an athlete, kind of which translated into executive, which actually is the biggest thing I'll carry with me, is the power of team, right? And understanding and believing inherently and knowing just how impactful it is to surround yourself with really high caliber people with common, you know, interests and goals and aspirations and working hard together. Right. Obviously that started to me from team sports from very outset, but I saw that firsthand as an executive, right? And I just saw unbelievable the power of great people getting together, the common cause, right? And so understanding that fabric of folks, that's been so inherent to who I am, what I believe. Whereas I think many entrepreneurs that, you know, might have a few fewer gray hairs, right, than I do, like I'm approaching this entrepreneurship thing a little bit later in the game than a lot, that haven't necessarily seen that, right, in action. And, you know, they're used to being the ones that solve all the problems, the smartest guy in the room, and, you know, they'll just hire a couple of people and they'll figure it out, but they're making all the decisions. I'm like, that's can happen. I've just seen the path to success significantly more often than not is surrounding yourself with really high caliber people that push you, that motivates you, that you can inspire them as well. So just understanding the inherent value of team, I would say has been the biggest thing that I've carried with me from my executive experience into entrepreneurship and how I thought about building this business. Like, and so while I don't look like your typical entrepreneur, my team doesn't look like your typical like early stage business as well. Like when I think of the background and the caliber and the capability and just what, you know, the folks that I've been fortunate enough to be on my team have done in their lives, it doesn't look like your typical startup. Obviously, I'm investing in that, but I absolutely believe that that pays off in building something that can fundamentally scale. So yeah, I would say it's the team aspect.
Yeah. And so with that said, I want to dive into Supergut in a second, but the last question, just based off of what you've been saying here, is with all that said, and you know, being a success as an executive CEO, all this other stuff, and kind of knowing, maybe not fully, what the entrepreneurship game would be like, but having an idea that it'd be a challenge. Mm-hmm. What made you want to switch over to doing that and taking this new burden on, this new obstacle, and then, you know, creating this new Supergut company?
It's a great question. It's something I, you know, thought about, and I do talk about a fair amount. It was one of those itches that I'd never scratched, right? Being the right hand, I always felt like at some point in time I would want to create something, but I also really enjoyed the right hand to the entrepreneur. I was good at it. You know, it's well-paid executive. I was like, I know how to work this thing, right? But over time, this was building in me. Like, and I was taking notes, right? Things that these successful entrepreneurs had done to position themselves and their business for success, specifically within this area of health and wellness. And how do you motivate behavior change? And how do you create products that get people healthier? So I've taken notes along the way, right? And so learning a lot of things from very successful entrepreneurs. There were also things that I was observing. I was like, I would do that differently, right? I mean, if I had, I like to say, if I had both hands on the steering wheel, as opposed to reaching over every once in a while, it's like I would have done that a little differently, right? And whether it was product or culture or different elements as to how to build a business that can scale. So there were both sides of that. I would say what really got me to throw my hat in the game, though, like I was thinking about this and it was building up in me, and this concept of doing something that really hadn't been done, like that had potential for greater impact than many of these massive companies that I'd worked for. I was like, I think we can take this to the next level in terms of functional food. Food is medicine. Just, I felt like there was an opportunity, but what really caused me to get into this was personal inspiration, actually. And it was my sister, Monica, who suffered from really chronic metabolic syndrome. So clinically obese, diabetes, you know, hypertension, so that's high blood pressure as well. And she passed away like far too young due to complication with her health and a high risk pregnancy.
Sorry to hear me.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. It's something that shook me to my core, but it lit a fire that was building in me over time and over time and over time. And you know, when I put two and two together, when I was starting to think about this, I was like, I think I'm going to create something. And I was talking to my wife, who's my confidant, my foundation. And I was like, you know, and I'm thinking of creating it, right? Versus this path. First, she was like, you're going to do what? Like, at this age, you're going to like just start back at the very beginning? And she's like, you know, that's Monica, right? You know, that is her speaking to you as motivating you to think about doing something different, that it could be so impactful in the world. And she was right. That really was the kind of the head meets heart moment for me deciding to throw my hat in the ring and start, you know, this business that has really significant health ambitions. Was really my little sister.
That's awesome, man. What a great story. It's really cool. And
thank you.
Yeah, I mentioned to you earlier too, you know, my mom passed away in October, so I look out for the signs too. You know, there's signs everywhere. You look around,
absolutely,
and you can feel them in certain ways. You can feel their inspiration, you know, in whatever you're doing, as long as you know that what you're doing is the right thing. It's making them proud. So it definitely motivates me too every day. And
yeah,
you know, it's one of the things that drives me.
I can relate really, really well to that.
That's awesome. But yeah, man, that's a really cool story. It's, and when you said that too, it's, I was thinking in my head, like, you know, it's like a famous athlete getting to the pinnacle of a sport, and then all of a sudden he's like, I want to try a new sport and start all over.
Jordan, right? Not to compare myself with Jordan.
Yeah,
at all,
you don't want to be like, Jordan in this way, though.
for real. But yeah, no, it's a funny analogy. It's kind of true though. It's kind of true. Like starting from scratch, you know, when used to managing multiple hundreds, you know, people on a team, if not 1,000 plus, and much, much larger businesses, to starting from scratch, right out of the home, you know, finding an office, recruiting employee number one. So, yeah.
How many employees do you have right off the bat when you first start Supergut? Is it like you get your team and then you just launch the company, or is it kind of like you just go along the way and start getting guys as you need them?
Yeah, no, I was fortunate because I, you know, when I started having the concept, the other area that I was fortunate of, like, given that I'd worked with such great people, that I had a great network, right? And so even when I started thinking about it, I was in touch with some former colleagues of mine about this concept to see who might be interested. And so I literally, day number one, I had employee number one, or I guess number two next to me, who was a PhD food scientist who had worked for me at Beachbody. And so there were two of us from day one, and soon joined by a third, another individual, a woman who was on our product development team at Beachbody as well. So I started out with at least a core, when first starting the company.
That's awesome. So tell me about it. What's going on with like your first idea? What's the first product you have in mind? How does it actually work? And why is it different than you know, the other ones out there? Because actually, it's the first one I've really come across as far as targeting the gut specifically through food. Yeah. It's a very interesting idea.
Yeah. So why don't I start there, if you don't mind, just about the gut, right? I mean, just to make it clear, like this space, like what we're talking about. Because, you know, at the end of the day, Supergut is all about gut health nutrition, like products that functionally work. They're literally going to do something for you, but also that you love, like that you're going to enjoy. And so for me, in trying to create a business that could have unbelievable impact on health, but doing it through food, it was really when my eyes were open to the science of the gut and what's called your gut microbiome. It's basically your digestive system. Like, you know, you're hearing more and more about gut health, but why? You know, why are you hearing about it? What does it mean? Essentially, it turns out we know now that your digestive system and the microbiome, call it the collection of like the trillions of microbes in your gut, largely bacteria, just play an outsized role in managing your health and being your foundation for health. It kind of governs everything, including disease prevention. So think about not just digestion. It starts there, right? Regularity, bloating, et cetera. That's kind of the signs of a healthy gut. But gut health goes much further beyond just digestion. It literally plays a role in regulating your cardiometabolic health, right? So your blood sugar control, keeping them in nice, stable, and steady levels, and insulin sensitivity and appetite and weight, you know, as part of your metabolism, even cardiovascular health. We even know now that the gut is very much connected to your mental health, things like mood and energy, even sleep quality. Frankly, even, you know, chronic neurological diseases, right, have some kind of connection to your gut health as well. And so that was what was fascinating to me, is just how pervasive of a role your gut had. And there's a lot of science and a lot of research, a lot of products that have come out, a lot of which has gone into medicine, like therapeutics and diagnostics. And then some of this science is going more into pills, like probiotics and things. There hasn't been anything that's really tapped into the depth of the gut and gut health in the world of food, like not in a truly functional way. You'll have the kombuchas of the world or some yogurt or things which can be beneficial kind of on the margin, so to speak, but to really tap in, you know, in a way that can functionally rebalance your gut in a healthy way and can show up in ways that can literally have a positive and even measurable impact on your health. That doesn't really exist in food yet, but now it does. And so that was the path, right? That's why I created Supergut, right? Is this way to fundamentally change your gut to help change your life, right? And so that was the concept. And where we focus on, and so we actually did a lot of research. We really take a science and what's called an evidence-based approach, like literally looking at clinical studies to see how this works and what we combine. We created our own proprietary blend of these prebiotic fibers. And what prebiotics are, it's the food for your gut. Like all those bacteria, they need to be fed. They need to be nourished. Typically, the Western diet does an awful job of feeding the good bugs. We feed the bad bugs, like processed foods and sugar and so forth. We don't feed the good bugs. And what the good bugs need? They need fiber, right? And particularly prebiotic fiber, right? So we focus on some really unique types of prebiotic fiber. It's called resistant starch, but there's others that we combine with it as well in our own blend to fundamentally feed your gut what it needs to create a healthy foundation. And that actually shows up in improved blood sugar, improved kind of weight management and other areas of health and wellness as well. We took that blend and now we put it into tasty foods. So we put it into shakes, right? We put it into bars, and we even sell that blend as a standalone basis as well, that you can just frankly add to anything, whatever you can stir it in, like coffee, oatmeal. You can make your own shake with it. And essentially, it turns any food into like a gut health superfood. So that's the concept, and those are the products that we have at Supergut.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's such a good way to do it. And you know, with all these shakes they have today, like protein shakes, people are taking protein shakes every day. They're taking green shakes. They're taking you know, all kinds of different health food shakes. Having that last ability too to just take the resistant starches and add it to that to make it, you know. Yeah. Even supercharged,
sure.
Right?
For sure. Like, and there's lots of great products out there that are directionally, I call, better for you, right? There's lots of great protein shakes. There's, you know, great green shakes that get you, you know, supplementation and fill some of the deficiencies that you're probably not getting in your diet. Those are all very good for you. And I say better for you. What we try to do is take it to that next level. Like, and so we have all the good stuff that you would normally look for in a protein shake. And frankly, a lot of stuff you look for in greens as well. So healthy amount of protein, you know, healthy fats. We have 26 different vitamins and minerals. But then on top of that, like actually the biggest ingredient that we have is our resistant starch fiber blend. Like it's the first ingredient on the label, right? Because you're getting, we are delivering in one shake, 20 grams of fiber, which is a really significant dosage. It's like a really, what's called efficacious dosage. That's going to do something for you and your health. It's not just, you know, not just better for you. This is like truly, it's truly functional food is what we create.
Yeah. I remember I used to work at a vitamin store back in the day, 10 years ago. And I'm sure working at Urban Naturals, you know, pretty much every vitamin out there. And so,
don't quiz me. I know a lot, there's a lot of them, but go ahead.
But I do remember a product, I think it was called Psyllium Husk.
Yeah.
And I think it had, I'm just top of my head, man, this is 10 years ago. I haven't, you know, seen Psyllium Husk much these days, but I think it was like 10 to 15 grams of fiber in it.
Probably not. I would five? Say, yeah, I would say 3 to 5 is what
okay,
you tend to
maybe
see.
Maybe it's 5.
For most fiber supplements, including Psyllium Husk. Psyllium Husk is a great, great product. Like you should try to get more of that in your life. I will say, you know, not all fibers are created equal.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Solid one. Oh, like what's the difference?
Right? Yeah, between, yeah. And obviously absolutely. I know 20 was a higher amount of fiber versus, I thought they were a little higher, but you're probably right. It's probably 3 to 5 range. But what's the difference between consuming that type of fiber versus the resistant starch type of fiber that you guys are using?
Yeah. So I have very much the same point. Fiber is really good. And in general, it's one of the macros that we need to get so much more of in the Western diet, like relative to protein and, you know, so many other things that we focus on a lot. There's not been nearly enough focus on fiber. So all fiber is good. The problem is literally none of us, the stats say 5% of U.S. adults get the minimum amount of fiber, recommended fiber in your diet every day. And that's 30 grams on average or so, right? And so all fiber is good. All fiber does benefit. All fiber does, you know, benefit your gut in some form or fashion. But like I said, not all fiber is created equal. A couple of the differences between many other fibers, you know, relative to the fiber blend that we have, and in particular resistant starch, one is just how effective is that fiber at quote unquote resisting digestion, like resisting digestion through your typical process. That's actually a good thing, right? You want fiber that actually resists digestion, that to slow down your the processing of that fiber into sugar, right? You keep your blood sugar nice and stable, and you want it to get as deep as possible, like into your gut microbiome, where it can most effectively feed the beneficial bacteria. And relative to other types of fiber, resistant starch is uniquely good at resisting digestion. It's actually why it's called resistant starch. And so it's very, very effective at feeding some really important microbes in your gut that are responsible for keeping us healthy. So it's very, very effective. I'd say the second thing that can be different between different types of fiber is how much of it can you consume before your stomach starts to turn in knots, right? And you, you know, dealing with bubble guts and you have to stay right next to the toilet and so on and so forth. There are different things, and it depends on like literally how it's digested, right? And how early is it digested and fermented in your digestive system. So many types of fiber, psyllium husk included, have sort of upper limits, right? In terms of how much of this can you actually get in. It's good to get it, but if you're capped at, you know, 5 grams, you're going to need to find fiber from other sources as well. And it's, the term is typically called low FODMAP. Which essentially means like a like resistant starch is a type of low FODMAP fiber. It means it's like less irritable on your digestive tract. Things like inulin, psyllium husk, some of the other types of fiber that you find out there, they're high FODMAP. And so they actually, you know, there's like a cap in terms of how much of them you can easily get into your diet before your stomach starts to turn into knots. So that's another big difference and factor. The final thing I'll say is like we spend a lot of time as to how we can get this fiber in a very versatile way into different food products. Many types of fiber like actually thicken up and gel up. And so it's very, very difficult. You have to just stir it and chug it, right? This is actually the way that we created our blend and the processing that we use in that process actually makes it very versatile and actually is able to get into different food items, you know, relatively easily. Like we obviously have a lot of formulation work to make that happen, but it's more versatile, relatively speaking, to get it into a shake at higher dosages, to get it into bars and still make them delicious, or frankly, to just stir it into water or coffee or what have you without it completely turning into gel. So those are some of the incremental benefits as to why, you know, our fibers call it that next gen prebiotic fiber of our resistant starch fiber blend.
Nice. And so how many, just to be clear, how many grams of fiber do you recommend for resistant starch? And then how much total fiber do you think? So I should actually say this. How many grams do you recommend of resistant starch? And is there actually a limit to how much of that resistant starch you should take in?
Yeah. So the stats are largely about fiber overall that I shared, like the 30 grams.
Yeah.
You can get it from, it's actually recommended to try to get diverse sources of fiber. So it's not all resistant starch. It's predominantly resistant starch that we have in our blend, mm-hmm. but there's other types of fiber that we have in our blend and also in general recommended in your diet. It's actually beneficial to get a diverse source that you're actually feeding different bugs in your gut, right? Yeah. And so in general, it's good to have multiple sources of fiber. Now, resistant starch being more tolerable, relatively speaking, you can actually tolerate pretty significant amounts of it. Like a lot of the clinical evidence that's been done on resistant starch as an ingredient will get up to 20, 30, 40 grams a day just of resistant starch. You could never get to anywhere close to those levels with like inulin, which is another type of kind of beneficial fiber, but you need to cap out at like 5 or 6 grams of other types of fiber.
Yeah. So I think that's what some people tend to worry about when they are ingesting fiber. Are they taking too much of it? Are they going to be sitting on the toilet all day? Is it going to be like too much of a good thing?
Yeah.
Or is it?
It's actually legitimate questions.
Yeah.
It's a legitimate question. The other thing I think is important for people to understand is with most types of fiber, and obviously this is very much even the case for resistant starch, it is functional, right? And so it's going to do something for you. And it's a good thing. And we even tell people, like when you first start, most people aren't getting that much fiber in your diet, like we talked about. So when people start with our products, we actually recommend start slowly, right? You don't want to jump in full bore. We know our shakes are delicious. We know our bars are delicious. Don't jump in and have a full shake and a bar and some fiber mix in one day. That's going to be a lot for your system. Like you actually should build up over time. The good thing is that you are able to, right? With our types of fiber, you can, build up a tolerance that your body adjusts to being able to consume more over time. So yeah, we actually do recommend, even for our products that are, you know, easy on your digestive system, relatively speaking, we even tell people to ease in just so that you do have kind of a comfortable experience and the body adapts, right? The body, back to where we started, the body's an amazing machine when fed the right things, but you just can't go from a traditional Western diet, kind of fast food, no fiber, to like getting a recommended daily amount of fiber, you know, overnight. You're going to, you know, have some sort of transition to go from one to the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the same thing as like, you know, you're starting to work out at the gym and you try to put on a load of 300 pounds on the bench press. It's just going to crush you in first day. You get, you know, this is a progressive load. You got to add on to it. But when you get to that point, when you get to that point, you're much healthier when you can actually have that, you know, right amount of fiber and nutrition, but you need to work up to it for sure.
Yeah.
What are some of the, if you know offhand, some of the good bacteria that that is fed with resistant starch and some of the fibers that you're using? Like, can you recall any of the names of some of the major players here of like, you know, the ones that convert to like serotonin? I know the serotonin is, they say, primarily made in the gut, like 90% of it. Maybe not that one specifically, but just other ones that you can maybe think of that that you're feeding with some of these with some of the fibers.
Yeah, so I'll speak to two different classes. I would say, first of all, the first class of fibers, or sorry, not of fibers, but of micros to be aware of, are that have a fair amount of research and science behind them, are like things that are in the bifido species and things that are in the lacto species as well. Like those are some of the classes that have good science behind them. What is unique about some of those species is those are, generally speaking, what are called primary degraders. What's a primary degrader? Like there's actually like one of the first ones to consume the food to have when it arrives in the gut. The interesting thing about like the gut and the gut microbiome, it's an ecosystem. And what one, when those first primary degraders, when they actually consume fiber, they actually make byproducts. They make acetate, they make, you know, hydrogen, oxygen, they make vitamins as well. And a lot of those byproducts actually become food for other bacteria called secondary degraders. And then the secondary degraders like consume that food. And then they are the ones that then create these amazing byproducts that have such positive benefits in your health. Things called short chain fatty acids like butyrate. Like that's actually a word that you might hear thrown about, like has been associated with a lot of these positive health benefits of the gut microbiome. A lot of it is, you know, in this process to create, have your gut and these bacteria create more butyrate. And that taps into these different systems, into insulin sensitivity, into appetite control. Frankly, if you've heard of some of these breakthrough diabetes and weight loss drugs that are out there, you know, Ozempic and Wegovy, you've got celebrities taking them and losing a lot of weight, et cetera. You know, they're based on these gut hormones that are produced in your gut. Guess what? Your body can make that, makes that naturally, right? That's what happens. And we actually know this is one of the mechanisms for resistant starch is when your gut and those microbes ferment and they're eating, you know, the fiber that comes in, they make the byproducts of butyrate and that stimulates system. It actually is stimulating natural production of these hormones, the same stuff that's in these super concentrated injection, very expensive drugs to lose weight. You can do a lot of that naturally when you are feeding your gut the right stuff. I can't recall offhand the names of the specific bacteria that those secondary degraders that we found. We actually, I will say though, like we've actually done a clinical study like on our products to show just how effective these are. A gold standard, double blind, placebo-controlled clinical study. It's actually been published in a peer-reviewed journal. Like it's really top-notch science. We actually, in addition to looking at outcomes like blood sugar control, weight, blood pressure, energy, mood, sleep, like all of those moved in the positive direction. We also looked at the microbiome profile. Like we actually partnered with Stanford University, one of the leading labs, Justin Sonnenberg's lab, to actually profile the microbiome to get an understanding of what's going on there. One of the things that was really fascinating, we saw a significant increase in the predominance of two specific microbes that are absolutely known to produce butyrate, these kind of byproducts that have such positive benefits on your health. There's some pretty long, like Latin type names, so I can't remember what they are, but we definitely saw that we were moving the needle on those really, really important microbes in our clinical study.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. There's so much that really goes on in the gut, and I think it's still one of the unexplored places in the body that science is just revealing more and more of its incredible benefits to optimizing it. And I think you're doing a lot of great work as far as figuring out some of those things and discovering what's really behind the mechanisms of why it all works. And
yeah,
you know,
thank you.
How it
thank
happens.
You. I appreciate it. No, it's funny because we know a lot more now than we used to know 5 and 10 years ago, like based on technology advancements, the cost of like DNA sequencing and understanding what's happening in the gut and doing, you know, fecal samples and so forth. We know a ton more now. And that's what we're leveraging that science to then productize and do something about it. I will say there's a whole lot more that we don't know, right? A whole lot more of discovery to happen. And I truly think we're in the early days, even though you're seeing more about gut health and people are talking about it. And it's, you know, trending even on TikTok these days. People are talking about gut health because it's, you know, it's buzzy, right? We are at the early days of what I call this gut health revolution of where it's going to be, I predict 5-10 years from now, you go to your doctor, you're not just, you know, taking a blood sample and talking about weight and, you know, blood sugar levels, et cetera, you're probably going to get a fecal sample. We're going to talk about your gut health and what are the key indicators that show that you've got a strong foundation in addition to blood pressure and cholesterol and weight, et cetera. I think we're headed in that direction just because we know so much now just how important your gut is to your overall health and your overall foundation. I think it's absolutely, we're at the early innings of the gut health revolution.
Yeah, I think we are too. And yeah, even the fecal sample, you know, medicine and what we can detect from that has really gone a long way just in the past 5-10 years. I mean, they've done incredible. You can tell so much from someone's health by studying their fecal, as gross as it is. I mean, with
it's gross, but we talk poop all day. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it really is incredible though, what you can get out of that. I mean, it's like the new blood test really. But what are your thoughts quickly on probiotics? We talked about prebiotics and fibers and such, but are probiotics beneficial in your opinion, or are they, I mean, I'm sure they don't hurt, but are they marginally beneficial, or are they actually worth doing?
So I'm gonna keep it real.
Yeah, definitely.
First, let me say that there are probiotic strains like live bacteria. Well, actually, let me start there. Just what is a probiotic? Just to make it clear, like what is a probiotic is intended to be live bacteria that you're adding right to the colony of trillions of bacteria that are already resident in you. So you're trying to add to that colony. You're trying to add live beneficial bugs to that colony. There are some live biotherapeutics that have shown some positive, you know, clinical evidence on outcomes, right? And so the concept of probiotics, absolutely. There's a lot there. There are some that are commercially available on market. There's a lot more research that needs to be done to actually validate many others. So there's absolutely something there. Now, where it might be a little controversial, the vast majority of just commercially available over-the-counter probiotics that you just might buy off the shelf, I think is marginal at best, or at a minimum, I should say, don't have a lot of evidence that they're doing a whole lot for you. And many people have looked at this and studied and done just shelf tests of just grabbing products off the shelf. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them just aren't necessarily delivering on that full promise. And the reason why it can be hard, right? If you think about what a probiotic has to go through to be successful, one, you got to have the right strains. You have to have the right amounts. They have to be alive. You have to find ways to ingest them, and they still need to be alive all the way through shelf life. They need to survive the digestive process, because if they, you know, get digested and dissolved in your stomach, they serve no purpose, right? They have to get all the way into your large intestine, into your gut. And many of them, has been shown, they actually need to like colonize. Like they need to stay. Otherwise, it could just be a passing thing, and maybe there's some that kind of come and go right away. But for them to have substantial sustaining impact, many of them actually need to stay, reside in your gut. That's a hard thing to do. And then, you know, for probiotics, for any bacteria in your gut to actually survive and thrive, they need to be nourished. And guess what? Back to where I started. None of us eat enough fiber, which is like the food and the nourishment. So you still need, even if you have a probiotic, even if, you know, it's getting there, you still have to nourish, you know, the gut microbes in your gut in order for them to do their job. So you still need fiber, and none of us get enough fiber, right? And so I have a pretty overall skeptical, you know, take. You should do your research, right, before anticipating that a particular probiotic that you just buy off the shelf is going to really serve its function. Again, I think the vast majority of them are not harmful. I think the vast majority of them are at least incrementally beneficial. The question is, how much are they doing for your health? And are there other ways that you can get a similar, if not much, much better validated impact?
Yeah. I tend to have a very similar take on them actually as well. And have you heard though, I've heard of this, I'm curious to hear your take, but have you heard that some probiotics, because of it, maybe it's just a total theory that's not true, but they, in the process of them being broken down by the gut, the digestive system as it's going to the gut, although they may not be alive by the time they hit the gut, they can then become prebiotics and be sort of eaten up by the other bacteria.
That's really good. Yeah, no, that actually is quite correct. Like I've actually learned about that from, so I'm fortunate because, you know, I'm not a physician, right? I'm obviously been in this space and I know quite a bit about health and wellness and gut health. I do have, you know, one of my colleagues, our chief science and medical officer, He's a gastroenterologist, used to work at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Chris Damon. And he's literally one of the leading gut health experts out there. And so I've been able to soak up and absorb so much information from him. So what you're saying absolutely is true, not all the time, but it can be true that, again, there's this whole ecosystem between these primary degraders and secondary degraders. And so not all the time, sometimes it's the byproducts of the probiotics that actually can feed other bacteria in your gut, and that can have a positive positive outcome. So yeah, there absolutely is some truth to what it is that you're saying.
Yeah. Indirectly, they can end up doing what you guys are doing directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So no, it's awesome, man. It's been a really good interview, and I learned a lot too as well, man. So I appreciate the information you shared, Mark. I want to try out these products too myself. So I'm going to have to get an aura coming
absolutely.
My way, so I can
try some of these out.
Yeah,
no, we might just shoot you some bars. We're actually unfortunately sold out of our bars because they've been so popular.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah,
that's a good problem to have in a way.
Good
right?
problem, but you know, I'm an entrepreneur. It's like missed opportunity.
It kills so you though. Yeah. Every day that goes by, man, it stings. It is a good problem though. You know, you bulk up on the next batch and you'll be good to go, I'm sure. Yeah, man, I really appreciate it. I'm gonna be checking these out myself very soon. But Mark, what's a place that our listeners can check out Supergut on their own and also check out what you're up to and what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the best place is on our site. Like, it's currently the only place actually to access our products, which is supergut.com. And so you can come and check us out. Obviously, we offer our products, shakes, bars, our fiber blend. We also really pay a lot of attention around content and education. And so you can learn a lot of what we talked about today, Justin, and even more. We put a lot of information out there on our blog, just about how gut health works, why it matters, how can this show up in your life. We do that a lot on our site, supergut.com. We also do it a lot on social as well. So that's the other place to engage with us. We're very, very active out there and putting out content that we try to be both, you know, approachable and entertaining, but also educational, right? To help people get smarter about this really, really important subject of gut health. And so you can follow us at Supergut on Instagram, on TikTok, Twitter even as well, are the primary channels that we're really active out there. So yeah, I hope folks come and check us out.
Awesome. Mark, thanks again for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care and I'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Justin. Take care, bro.